pipes if you got good beer.
Well, there may be more to it than just a little good bait. You might need to know a few more things, and hey, that's what we're all here all about.
I got that tip to relate.
You do? All
yeah,
right.
You know, here and there.
Well, you know, generally speaking, you do. I'm just wondering, you got something specific?
Oh, well, you know, there's a few specifics in the game for sure.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, it's just the lowland lakes are fishing real good again. Mm-hmm. That's what's open, of course.
Yeah.
We still have the Stehekin River open, and some of these small tributaries, you know, that can be forgotten about from time to time, like Boulder, will be open through October.
Okay.
But, you know, I've just been focusing on a few of my favorite still waters. Happy to be watching these beautiful colors change, catching some pretty big fish.
I was going to say, there is kind of a strange creature on your Facebook post there.
Yeah, I had to send you the picture of it just so you had some idea of what's been going on. I've been catching some of the astounding pigs over at Rufus. But you know, at this time of the year, I'm also looking for some fish that are harder to find throughout the system.
Oh.
You know, most of the time, if you're lucky, you can find a red band trout in there, coming over from, making its way over the Grand Coulee Dam and that Roosevelt Pool.
Wow.
And you'll know you got one of those things on there because they actually have a tail, unlike the triploid rainbows that are in there. And boy, they have a tail. It's about the size of my hand, which if people haven't met me, I've kind of got banana hands, as I call them. And man, these things can just put the pedal to the metal. I was not lucky enough to see one. Although, you know, when I used to go there and fish from the shore, a lot of guys are used to getting, I think the average is 0 to 2 in about 8 hours. And I think I released probably 15, lost a good, you know, half dozen. And came home. I actually brought home a couple too, because here again, it's fall and it's hunting and gathering time. And so smoked up some of those, and man, just delicious. I'm going to have to bring you some. I should have brought you some this time.
That would be okay with me.
Yes, yeah,
that would totally be okay with me.
All the fat in those guys definitely is good for one thing, and it's for making a great product. And I'm talking about the triploids, of course. Most of them are fin clip or have an adipose clip.
Maybe explain to folks exactly what the deal is with the genetic makeup of those guys.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people hear the word triploid and they just think of the triploided rainbow trout. You can triploid anything from oysters on up to any kind of creature most of the time. And what they're really doing is just kind of what's called addling the egg at a point in its when it's becoming an embryo and it's kind of starting to develop, they'll shock it. And a lot of time with, and that's the addling reference there. And that's usually with triploid rainbow trout, a pretty generic recipe. And that's 20 minutes after they're fertilized. So they're kind of trucking through their, formation of the embryo. And then it's formed to a point where I think it's a lot like, you know, humans. A lot of people may not know, but I saw it in a cool Discovery Channel thing or something, you know, that humans are all, female or whatever. And then they make a split at some point in the, in the generation of the embryo there. Same basic thing with the rainbow trout that we're working with there.
Doesn't it involve temperature? Don't you just, when you say shock it, it's just raise the temperature a little bit?
So yeah, there again, it's 20 and 20 and 82 are the numbers we're talking about. 20 minutes after fertilization, for 20 minutes, we will plunge them into 82 degree water. And I think it catches them right when they're still female and that sex split hasn't happened. Because most all triploids that you will ever see will be female.
Okay.
And so they're also non-productive female. They won't form their eggs. They won't get all the way to maturation. That way they'll dump that extra energy into making flesh and making fat. They generally grow twice as fast, but that also happens they also live half as long. So it's kind of, you know, they just kind of burn themselves out a little bit.
Do they do that just for sport fishing? Is that the point? Or is there some other point to it?
They do that in a lot of cases for, those attributes. The gaining weight quickly, easy one. That's cool. Everybody wants big fish, ones that grow quick. But it can also help you control your population because there's a known amount of fish in there. You know, you say your triploids are going to get in there, they're going to get big, and 4 to 5 years, and then they're going to be dead. So you don't have to worry about having too many fish in your lake and eating up all the food.
Oh, I see.
So you can population control, and you can also produce a good fish really fast. As well, you can ensure that they don't spawn if they, say, get into the methow out of Paragon Lake or something like that with any of the true native red band or cutthroat that we have in here. So there's multiple, you know, reasons to do it. But in this water body here in Rufus Woods, there are three big commercial net pens. And now net pens have probably come to people's minds lately with the catastrophic dumpage over there in the Puget Sound of Atlantic salmon. Yeah, and you know, I have mixed feelings about them too. I would rather see this portion of the Columbia kind of get worked back into the enhancement stuff that we're doing here, or re-enhancement stuff. A lot of people would also say the moment ESA listed fish start coming through your water, then all of a sudden it's a big headache and a lot of politics. So I'm also getting to that point in my life where it's just like, holy cow, it's you know, it's just a whole nother ball game once that gets started.
You know, well, this is an interesting subject. We can maybe dig into this at another time, but for folks who don't know, you also, as well as guide, you work for the Yakima Nation in fisheries.
I was lucky enough to start working with their kelt.
Yeah, and I have a friend that lives up in Canada, and he said they had some trouble with commercial net-grown operations. And apparently, BC, anyway, is kind of turning over a lot of their fisheries more and more to the native tribes. And I don't think they ever use those kind of operations, do they?
You know, sometimes net pens can be helpful. Sometimes they're used to hold native fish.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as, you know, there's, I mean, it's like, to some it's black and white, to others there's kind of degrees of evil. And definitely, like, Atlantic salmon in the Pacific Ocean, no brainer, just the other end of the spectrum, just evil, bad idea,
bad
you know,
idea.
Whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least with these guys, we're working with rainbow trout, quote-unquote. And here we've been many times before. What is a rainbow? Well, the rainbows were kind of pretty much started off of Sacramento red bands, which until, you know, not that long ago, geologically speaking, ran into the Columbia. So long story short, the red bands in the Columbia and the Sacramento are almost indiscernibly different, at least by the naked eye. Genetically, they are. But they're almost the same fish that started the rainbow trout, quote-unquote, Oncorhynchus micus gardneri. And so now we call the rainbow trout that we, you know, basically took from the wolf that was the red band of the Sacramento slash kind of the Columbia and turn it into the poodle that we call Oncorhynchus micus micus. And so that's an easy way to you know, kind of just split it. You know, it gets really, really foggy. But here, our fish are our red band trout until they kind of hit the ocean. And they come back from the ocean, they're a red band steelhead. You know, and that's just how it works. It's kind of hard to understand, but you know, that's where we're at. But
that's why we ask you these questions, because you actually can answer these questions.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, the root of these fish that are in net pens and in Rufus Woods could be a heck of a lot further away from the root of the fish like the Atlantic salmon over here in the Pacific and some of these other terrible ideas. They also do, though, have some of the drawbacks. Fish in concentration make diseases. Parasites, abundant, and bacteria love to kind of gather in these zones, and then they kind of slough off into the environment around them. So that's another con.
It's a monoculture issue that comes up in every monoculture.
It totally is. But we kind of are at the point where fish haven't passed the Chief Joe Dam in a long time. It's another project that's kind of in the works, I hope, to see where they start working on getting ladders, or maybe some of those fish catapult and just start launching them up into the upper Columbia out of cannons or something. So we may start seeing native fish pass through there, which may change the operating policies or even the operations being there as far as these net pens go. So you never know, but that could be a ways down the road.
Okay. Well,
as for now, yes, great sport fishery.
Yeah, there we go. We get off sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But I think it is nice that we can at least kind of inform these people what's what and what's going on, even with these waters that they may fish all the time. They might not think that far into it. But as far as it goes right now, you know, local lakes are great. Maybe wear your Hunter's Orange fishing vest so you don't get shot while you're on the water. But, you know, Campbell, Cougar, little twin, big twin. All these lakes been fishing great, and just big fish, cold water, great colors, a great time of the year to be on the water.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, having it cool down just makes all the difference. So.
Oh, absolutely. So if anybody wants any fishing tips or would like to book a trip, get a hold of me on the old interwebs at madhowfishingadventures@gmail.com, or you can check out the blog or podcast at Fly Fishers Pro Shop, or just give me a call the old-fashioned way at 509-429-7298. Take care of one another, protect that public land, and get that fish right on while you're doing it. I'm going fishing, my mama's going fishing, and the baby's going fishing.